Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter at www.churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Does your church have the Church Plus Factor? In this episode, Lewis Center Director Doug Poe speaks with Tim Shapiro and Kara Ferris about their book, Divergent Church. They examine innovative, alternative faith communities that combine religious practice with a Church Plus Factor, that is, a dedicated focus on some unique aspect of their church's cultural DNA, like gardening, table fellowship, artistic expression, and more.
Welcome to Leading Ideas Talks, a podcast featuring thought leaders and innovative practitioners. I'm Douglas Poe, the director of the Lewis Center, and your host for this talk. Joining me is Tim Shapiro, the president of the Center for Congregations in Indianapolis, and Kara Ferris, the resource grants director at the Center for Congregations. They both are the authors of a book called Divergent Church. I really enjoyed the book and was really struck. And one of the things that I'm sure you both have heard this before, why the term divergent?
We didn't name a kind of congregation and then go out and try to find them.
Right.
We, from the Center for Congregations in Indiana's point of view, we were beginning to get some calls, not a lot of contacts, but a few contacts from congregations or religious communities that didn't fit the profile of the kind of congregations that we serve, the vast majority of congregations that we serve. And it also meant that the center wasn't really very well positioned to do the kind of consulting, education, and grant making work with these particular outliers, we'll call them. And so that spurred our curiosity, and then Kara can speak more. Kara has had her own personal interest as well as professional interest in representing the center around innovation and what congregations were doing that could be termed creative or innovative.
Yeah,
but we didn't start with, oh, let's go find something we'll call divergent churches.
Gotcha. And Kara, as you respond, can you talk about sort of, did you know of these congregations previously, or you just people kept telling you about congregations that were doing unique things, and you said it would be great to just go experience what's taking place?
So I found the congregations in a variety of ways. I went to a couple of conferences about innovation in congregations or innovation in religion, thinking like there'll be some people there who are probably leading something that's unusual or different or innovative or new. So I met people that way just by going to gatherings where I thought they might be. And then I did a lot of Google searching for different search terms that turned up different kinds of congregations around the country that after I read enough about them, I could determine that they seemed like innovative places that were still dwelling within fairly recognizable congregational life. So I went in that direction. Tim found a few because he knew some people, and I think that those are the primary ways we found. And then once I started finding people, I did start asking, who else should I be talking to? And even now, as I'm still trying to find more folks who are doing this, there are more out there, but I think not that there's only the 12 or 13 in the book that we uncovered, but there's not a whole lot else out there that's on the radar enough to really follow up on. So Google searches and going to couple conferences.
That makes perfect sense. And picking up on your last point, for both of you to sort of think about, as I was reading about the different congregations, and I can imagine congregations picking this book up and being excited, but I wonder, can any church just decide to be divergent, or do you sort of have to have a certain DNA to be divergent?
I think that it could be a little bit of a combination of both. Because I do think the hope is that, the reason I say that is the hope is that for traditional congregations that maybe find themselves stuck or wanting to be different, they can set their sights on doing that and try to change their DNA a little bit so that they can consider themselves innovators or willing to experiment and change their DNA. And some are just born that way. They, because of the particular founding pastor, kind of like any new religious gathering, any phenomenon where it can be heavily dependent on the vision of the leader and that person's vision and DNA being the seed that's planted that everything grows out of. So I think it can be a little bit of both, but I think for those people who think, oh, I don't have this in our DNA at all, it doesn't mean that they can't do it, that they can't find precedents for it and give it a try or change their DNA in some aspects.
And Tim, as you get ready to respond, I just want to, Kara mentioned sort of the lead pastor or sort of the visionary. Do you think that this sort of congregation has a higher dependence on sort of a visionary leader, or is it something that can be driven sort of by the congregation itself?
Yeah, so I think that it is true that in the particular congregations that we write about in Divergent Church, that they all have high capacity, creative, innovative clergy leaders, or at least designated leaders. I think they all, well, almost all of them would consider the leadership clergy leaders, and maybe not 100% of them, but they definitely 100% of them are creative, innovative, gifted, educated in rich ways, good stewards of their own vocational discernments. Having said that, I think that almost all of the congregations, even though the vision of the leader and whatever fingerprints the leader might leave or have on that congregation are pretty well revealed and clear, they don't feel like top-down leadership or dependent on a particular kind of personality that, say, as an evangelical megachurch might have been a generation ago. The congregations, though they're highly influenced by the vision of the leader, the ones in the Divergent Church book, and I think the departure of the leader would be a real challenge for the congregation in terms of their organizational structure, in terms of the way in which ministry is done, in terms of the way in which many decisions are made. It's a consultative, at the least, and if not highly collaborative, form of being community.
So in that collaborative form of being community, what, as you all sort of think about sort of next steps for some of these congregations, because obviously in the world we live in, people are always moving and shifting. What could sort of help prepare congregations for the sort of the visionary leader to move on, but they don't lose sort of that DNA that has sort of been constructed within them to try and do experimental things? And of course, I'm asking this because this is a challenge that many of our congregations face who are not divergent. So how do you sort of help congregations to not be so dependent upon just one person, but they really can take ownership of the ministry themselves?
One of the marks, and surely one of the primary marks of the gatherings, communities that we learned from, was their attention to some aspect of life that the congregation attends to in addition to worship, or in addition to some of the other hallmarks that one might expect to find in a congregation. So there's the garden church that attends to growing, having a garden really in the same, at least when we were studying them, in the same space in which they gathered for worship. There's the Galileo church that was focused on being attending to what it means to be a spiritual refugee. So almost all of these congregations attended to some aspect of life that became synonymous with their purpose, their intention, what they wanted to be about. So I would think that if a congregation, an innovative, a creative congregation that was experimenting with something new, if they can be clear about this purpose that they have that transcends the personality of the leader and can build just enough structure to maintain their attention to that other thing, that ultimate concern that they've been focused on in their congregation, that would help with their transitions. And so that way that might translate to more established congregations is clarity about their purpose and attention to something that, to those things that build up the life of their adherents and not just the institutional sustainability of the congregation.
I appreciate that response, and I think it's helpful. And I don't know if Carol want to pick up some points, but I also wonder, as you were talking, that one of the challenges congregations face actually is they're trying to do too many things and they don't really find that sort of one thing that they can really put a lot of energy behind that is their ultimate concern, that they try to be everything to everybody. And what it sounds like these divergent congregations have discovered is we can't be everything to everybody, but what we can do is we can become the garden church, or we can become the spiritual refugee congregation, or the cowboy church, or whatever it may be. We can do that really well.
Yeah, I concur that there's, in the congregations that we learned from, there was a very beautiful clarity about their identity and about their purpose, and that it wasn't diffuse. I would concur that something about knowing who they are and what they do want to attend to, and not letting that become just anything, like the last best idea, creating some boundaries around that, would contribute in most contexts health.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'm thinking of a couple of the examples from the book where what they're attending to, in addition to the typical churchy stuff, is not quite as concrete as something like cowboy or garden. It's a bit more theoretical, or maybe even just theological, and that I don't want to put words into their mouth, but I think they would say that it's a little bit harder to kind of hang your hat on something that's not quite as concrete as a garden or a cowboy church, just for examples, because those are nice and concrete. So it becomes a little more difficult as an organization and a leadership task to create that real sense of belonging and identity among the membership, as a in addition to the clergy leader, to carve out their niche and kind of be able to figure out how to articulate their identity when it is a bit more vague or harder to put a word around.
And I think what you're saying, Carrie, makes a lot of sense. And one of the things you all talk about, and I think you're on track here. And again, I wonder how congregations as a whole can think about this, as imagination. And it seems like divergent congregations are really good at imagination. Do you have any clues of sort of, does it come naturally to them, or do you think that there are just ways they sort of engage this process that creates sort of this wonderful imagination and being able to see things differently?
Tim, you can offer a corrective, but my first thought is that it kind of gets back to the leadership question. I think for each and every one of those people that we featured in the book, they themselves have, they've got the imagination, they've got the creative idea, in a very entrepreneurial spirit, in the same way that someone thinks they're on to the best next mousetrap, for lack of a better example, the next best invention. It's birthed out of them. It's very creative, but it doesn't live in a vacuum, because, you know, while the Garden Church, Anna in California from the Garden Church, that's her idea. She feels a great conviction about reclaiming kind of an ignored urban space and the people who are around it, and being church in a different way, because traditional church isn't going to work out well in that particular neighborhood. She can't do it by herself, but I think people like that, those kind of visionary entrepreneurial people, have a pretty intuitive read on humanity and certain slices of society and culture, and they're able to find something that fits. So I think if somebody's lacking it, if they're totally lacking in imagination and initiative, they're probably not going to do something that feels divergent or really innovative. I think they have to have that imagination and then pitch it and bring people along with them. And I think for many of them, it just happens somewhat naturally, not without a lot of troubles and struggles and failure and figuring it out and failure and figuring it out. So it's not like it's this blissful, easy journey, but I do think some of them have just got some panache and some follow through and a lot of grit behind that curiosity and imagination and commitment to this is really the right thing right now and pushing it through.
Yeah, I think, Kara, once again, that's helpful. And Tim, I know you may want to jump in, but let me add to that. It seems to me there's also, though, a good balance, because they also seem to really be committed to practice and doing practice really well.
They all still love church. So, yeah, to your point, they are committed to practice because none of them has given up on their belief or their own faith or the institution of church that they've come from, that they're still getting support from, or maybe they're not getting any support from. So it is, I think, I'm interrupting you, Doug, but you're right.
Oh, no, that's fine.
In that it is, it's not just imagination without being anchored to something. It's, I remember asking, well, we asked all of them, and I think it's chapter 10 maybe, where we asked them, why do you stay in a religious space? And they all invariably have deep, both theological and emotional commitments that keep them rooted, because those practices and that tradition, even if they've spun it to look at in a way that maybe critics would say that's not good, whatever, not good practice of that or that, they're anchored in it because that's part of their DNA too, is they're not giving up on their faith.
Tim, would you like to add?
Well, I want to concur with what Kara said about these people are imaginative and creative, and that they're committed to reconstituting in some way the experience of church as opposed to not participating or going in a totally different direction. I also would say that many of them have had their conviction of wanting to try something different comes from some experience. So there was something about several of them had served previously in what would be considered more of a established context. And it wasn't like it was a horrible experience, but there was something missing. And so though it's their stories to tell, not ours, for many of them, they could point to some experience in their life that has led them to want to lead a faith community in which there is radical honesty, or there's something, some experience or a moment or epiphany in their life where they realize they just couldn't do church in a way that, say, my tradition, the presbytery wants them to do it, but they can do, they can gather people around Christ in a particular way that they think will feed people's souls because it's focused on life and not on the church itself. So many of the divergent church leaders have imagination, they're committed to some form of the church, and their resilience and creativity is coming from some life experience they have in which the norm or the established status quo no longer feeds their soul.
So I want to add another term that I personally love, and that's nimble. And you all in chapter 8 talk about the importance of being nimble. And again, I'm thinking about these divergent congregations all were very nimble in some ways. What is it that well-established congregations can learn about being nimble, or are well-established congregations more like the Titanic and you just can't turn them around?
Yeah, so one of the examples I think of in the book would be the community church of Lake Forest and Lake Bluff and some of their charitable or social service type activities where they're able, the pastor there, Tom Dickelman, is able to pull together a charity event in a matter of, you know, a matter of a couple of weeks rather than, you know, having to establish a task force or a committee that discerns for 3 months and then makes a report to a board and then the board sends it back to, you know, task force. So that's just one example of a congregation in the book being nimble. There are a variety of examples of congregations, the divergent churches making decisions about how they're structured, about their ground rules of conversation, about their how they're going to conduct worship in relationship to a meal. And indeed, since the book's been written, these congregations are different than, you know, than they were a year and a half ago when we were gathering the information from them. So I think that partly because they're relatively new, they have less institutional structures embedded in them that might restrict agility, partly just because of where they are in the life cycle, you know, in the congregational studies language, where they are in the life cycle of a congregation. So they're more agile because they're just newer and they have less guidelines and policies and procedures set up. I also think they're agile because they intentionally want to focus more on people, mission, activities, and life than the institution called congregation. So I think they are agile. And then the last thing I could think is I think they're also agile because they, back to this issue of imagination and innovation and creativity, they have very creative leaders in which when there's a new idea, they take it and run with it and try another iteration of an experiment.
Thank you for that. I think that you hit on all the key points. I also wondered as I was reading the book, and you all may have heard this comparison also, but I would be curious, Is there a difference, if any, between what many consider to be fresh expressions and what you all are naming as divergent? Fresh expressions started in England, and fresh expressions has come to the United States. And it's a movement where people are trying to do things outside of the box. So in Florida, there's sort of a canoe church. There's also individuals who are sort of doing yoga, sort of faith communities. They're doing these different faith communities that aren't your sort of standard faith community. And it seems to me that there's some similarities with these sort of fresh expressions faith communities and the divergent faith communities.
My guess is that whether it's divergent church or fresh expressions or any number of United States initiatives by denominations around church planting or encouraging creative forms of congregations, they're all different. They're all expressions of the same yearning or longing, and that is acknowledgement that congregating in the name of God is really important. And just because certain structures or certain ways in which that has been inhabited may be in decline doesn't mean that it's any less important. And so that it would make sense, not unlike in other fields where similar innovative expressions are popping up that at first are perhaps unrelated, but are very similar expressions of the same thing. You know, in different science communities, people find out that, you know, if an astronomer in the U.S. has been tracking something in the universe, they all of a sudden find out that a scientist, an astronomer in Australia was doing the same thing, and that someone in Germany also was. They just weren't aware of everybody's work. So I think something along that phenomena is probably happening in congregational circles, that whether it's new fresh expressions or something that a denomination is encouraging, or in the evangelical community, the liturgists or the divergent church, these are similar expressions of the same things that are emerging in different locations because the cultural moment and the theological moment is ripe for it.
And Kara, did you want to add?
No, I think that last part sums it up.
As we draw to the end, is there any last words either one of you would like to say about the book or about your interests in sort of looking and studying these innovative congregations?
Well, I'd say based on getting to know the leaders of the divergent churches in the book, that, and maybe readers would resonate with this too, especially if they feel like they're kind of out there, the lone voice in the wilderness, or kind of out in the wind all on their own, trying something new and taking some risks, that the folks who came together for the book found it really encouraging and very normalizing to their own experience to meet other leaders who were doing similar things in their own context. So my big hope is that it encourages people to try something new, or to trust their instincts about their read on either their current congregation or something they've wanted to try. I mean, I don't advocate trying something that is put someone at financial risk or, you know, hurts their family or something like that. But I do think that there's real encouragement and inspiration in people who are trying something new, even though either maybe their own internal critic or external critics tell them for various reasons that it's not a good idea, because some of them are really making some headway, and they're giving great meaning to lots of people as a result of their leadership and fulfilling their own sense of call and purpose. And so I hope there's something in the book that just provides encouragement and inspiration and a sense of normalizing for people.
And Tim, what about you?
I guess I would highlight the decision for the book to be organized around practices as opposed to the practice of shaping community or the practice of artistic expression or the practice of community engagement, that the book is organized around practices as opposed to the outer form of the congregation. That so some of the congregations meet in very unique places, the garden in an outdoor downtown urban space, the cowboy church that meets at a trail ride center. So sometimes there's uniqueness and innovation around where the congregation meets or how it organizes itself. And so that can be a very interesting and exciting thing to chase down. And so there's all kinds of blogs and material about, the pub church and so forth. But what I find most engaging is that regardless of where they meet and the form that the organizational structure takes, that the real heart or soul or the wonderful deep roots about these creative communities are how they're restructuring, re-experiencing, reforming age-old practices that are highly contextualized in their own setting. And the what we learned from Katie Hayes about leadership in a really that's described in one of our chapters, the chapter on community engagement, in which the Galileo Church was faced with a very difficult leadership challenge and community challenge, and the way the intentionality about the practice of leadership the practice of leadership is really rich, and to me more rich than the more surface descriptions of where the congregation meets or how it's organized.
Well, thank you both, Tim and Kara, for taking the time to talk with us about Divergent Church. And I know that our listeners will appreciate your insights and pick up many of these themes and hopefully be able to apply them to their congregations.
Leading Ideas Talks has been brought to you by the Taking Church to the Community video toolkit. Explore strategies your congregation can use to reach beyond its walls with worship, community events, ministries, and service to reach community members where they are. Taking Church to the Community is available on download and DVD at churchleadership.com/community.
On our next episode of Leading Ideas Talks, Doug Poe speaks with small church vitality expert, Dr. Lou Parks. They explore strategies to help ministry flourish, even in a church that doesn't have its own pastor, or a pastor who doesn't serve just one church.
I don't want to think of the small church as an inferior version of a larger church. I want to think of it as of having its own excellence, its own valuable life, but you have to have the spirit to enter into that and to make it work.
Leading Ideas Talks is available on iTunes, the Google Play Store, and Stitcher. Subscribe today. Thank you for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe free to Leading Ideas at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.